Dr. Julie is in this morning on a Thursday, and we're talking about aging. And she has a specialist from her team as well, a Galthorpe therapist, Jennifer Aronson. Welcome again, Julie and Jennifer. Julie, we'll just kind of let you set it up, why you decided to come with this topic today.
Thanks, Sean. Well, by 2050, this is the stats I've collected, it's projected that 1 in 6 people worldwide will be over 65, making up 16% of the population. And as I said earlier, in Canada, we doubled between 2001 and 2021, and it's estimated by Stats Can in 2023, the percentage of people over 65 had increased to 19.3%. So this demographic shift brings challenges, especially in how we provide care. Many older adults, they face declining mobility, cognition, and they're more frail as they age, so they require specialized care. In my view, we also need to consider how this can't be a one-size-fits-all to providing ideal support in our aging years. You know, not everyone likes crafts and bingos. And as we were just talking off-air, you had mentioned how sometimes even how we're entertaining people or recreation, we're not gearing it necessarily to the people who are requiring care at this point. So that change needs to happen as generations change and the people needing care change. So we need to think about how aging has changed, and that's why I wanted Jennifer to join us this morning.
All right, well, I've got a question here for Jennifer. So as an elder care therapist and a professional geriatric care manager, you know, you work closely with these individuals. What are some common challenges that they face?
Thanks, Miriam. Seniors face many challenges, including health issues, financial insecurity, social isolation, falls, physical inactivity, behavioral health issues, ageism, and a lost sense of purpose, difficulty accessing healthcare services. One of the biggest challenges is the transition from living independently to needing more support. Many are not aware of the private and public sector resources available to help them meet their care needs. Many are not aware of the differences between retirement residences and long-term care homes. Some end up in large-scale nursing homes, which can feel isolating and institutionalized. Smaller, supportive residences offer a more personalized approach, focusing on maintaining independent and quality of life.
So, Dr. Julie Galthorpe, you mentioned the move towards smaller, supportive residencies. So, I'm involved with long-term care with Hastings County. So I just got the position of chair for Hastings Manor here in Belleville and Centennial Manor in Bancroft. And I've been on long-term care as an appointee on the team, if you will, for several years now. And just reading some of the material for the show this morning, referencing smaller centers, but it comes back to what you just talked about, Jennifer, is the affordability for people.
Yeah, and I think, Sean, since you're on those committees, you're probably aware of the report that came out last week. The National Institute on Aging called on government at all levels to make small care homes the standard across Canada, pointing to a survey that it did in 2021 that found all respondents, nearly all of them, said they do everything to avoid a long-term care home. And, you know, maybe as we're over 50, we kind of make jokes about being in long-term care and what that might look like. But it's a very real threat for people. And it shouldn't feel threatening when we're aging that we have to end up in a place where we're not happy. One of the report authors, Dr. Sina, said if people can't remain in their homes, the next best thing would be better quality long-term care in home-like settings, especially since the majority of residents are likely to have some form of cognitive impairment. And Jennifer touched on this. So for people living with dementia, for example, living with a mass amount of people, high volume of staff turnover, it makes it overwhelming for them. And, you know, we're thinking, well, this is just undoable. But the push is because long-term care in the UK and Europe, it's largely shifted to developing small care homes. While, as the report said, North America has emerged as an outlier. So we're unlike other places because we prefer these large institutional care settings that resemble lower acuity hospitals rather than home-like settings. So we're medicalizing everything and making it not like a home environment. And this is, I know people and staff that work in these residences do everything they can to make it comfortable and appealing for people. when we're talking with family members and aging people is that they fear being in large scale settings because they get lost in the shuffle. The pandemic highlighted how problematic this becomes when family members were not able to provide that oversight. And these smaller settings seem to offer a sense of community. They enable more tailored care plans that Jennifer can talk about. And they often feel more like home to their residents.
Yeah. So Jennifer, so are there any benefits? Well, what kind of benefits have you seen in these smaller residences when compared to these traditional nursing homes?
Excuse me. I understand and appreciate how difficult it is to engage in difficult conversations with loved ones. It is absolutely crucial to have open discussions about the options early and to visit different facilities to find the best fit that will meet their care needs. Most people don't make good decisions when in crisis. It's important to involve older adults in decision-making about their care, which can make a world of difference.
You know, I had a conversation with a couple last week, and their parents were successful in the business world, but they're living in a local elderly retirement setting, if you will. It's in around $6,000 or $7,000 a month.
Right.
There's a PSW on staff. They have, if they need medication or someone's making sure that they're taking their meds, so they have healthcare experts on staff. But that's not the reality for most of Canadians that don't all have a big pension to look forward to or have that support, financial support. And when you have settings like Hastings Manor or Centennial Manor up in Bancroft, staff are working hard. They're trying to make the best of it. Could there be more funding? Yes. But you can see where there's a big difference in treatment or opportunities for people. And it comes back down to the almighty dollar.
It does. And I think, Jennifer, we were speaking about this earlier in terms of the difference also between retirement homes and then long-term care facilities. Right. So the different levels of nursing care and support required. And then we have those financial aspects that you're touching on in terms of the affordability for people as they age to have the care they need. And there has been a push for people to stay in their homes longer. And these are the people that I often see in my practice is I'm talking to family members who are overwhelmed by trying to provide care for their loved ones, whether that's their spouse, their parent. And when it's their spouse, that person is often also aging. So they're caregiving plus trying to manage their own needs. And it can be highly isolating. Accessing services that are not private are extremely difficult and limited. And again, it's not that the people doing the work are not trying to do a good job. It's just that it's a thin level of support, often for the level of care needed. So a higher level of care is needed than what in-home care is providing at this point. And that puts a lot of pressure on family members to try and maintain their health while also caring for their loved one.
I think I got the numbers from my memory. In Ontario, the rule is three, let's say, RPNs or PSWs for 30 residents. So if you have a PSW and RPN working with somebody, whatever that case might be in the morning, what does it do to the other two staffers that got to deal with 29 people? Are my numbers correct? Is it three for 30? I think that's what it is.
I trust you.